And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And it's good to be with you. Yes, you have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo, the Apologetic Zone, I like to call it. And I'm Gary Matuta, and it's great to be with you today as we discuss how to explain and defend the faith with clarity and charity and confidence as well. It's a wonderful show in store for us today. No, it's not Godzilla versus Rodan, but it is Mathema versus Common Objections. How about that? Yes, we're going to have Mathema or Mathoma back on the show. Not really sure how you pronounce it. If you recall, let's see, way back at March 21st, we did part one of the show where Mathema, who's a very popular YouTuber, his YouTube channel features mostly math. You know, he loves math. So if you go on YouTube and type in Mathema, you'll find things on geometric algebra and all sorts of strange and abstract mathematical stuff. But dig a little deeper, you find out that Mathema is actually a very good classical theistic apologist in his own right. And in fact, I love his channel because of you know, how he deals with anti-God objections. So he does it very thoughtfully. And I think, you know, he's a great addition to the show. So what I want to do is have him on. We're going to be answering the most common atheistic objections that you'll find out there in social media and whatnot. So Mathema is revisited. Okay, Mathema part two, I guess. As always, we are going to have our Finding the Fallacy, which today, you know, it's strange. Our Finding the Fallacies lately have been lots of Latin phrases. Today's Latin phrase is tu quoque fallacy, which means, and you also. So we're going to talk about that fallacy. Also, the Meet the Early Church Father today is Tatian the Syrian. Tatian the Syrian. Very important early church father, not very well known. And he's also not, you know, there are problems with Tatian. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And as always, you are part of the show. If you have a question for Mathema, or perhaps some non-believer has thrown an objection at you that you're not really sure, you know, how to answer in regards to whether or not God exists, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Love to have you on the show. Or if you would like to email your questions, please shoot us an email. It comes to the Dojo mailbox. I'm glad to answer it. And I also saved the good ones to put on the air. Or, you know, maybe you're in a situation right now that you would like some advice or perspective. Or maybe you want to share a story about how you discussed the faith or defended the faith with someone and it turned out really well. Or maybe it didn't, and you'd like some advice about where it went wrong. Send it to us at questions@handsonapologetics.com. Questions@handsonapologetics.com. It flies through the internet into the electronic dojo mailbox, and we'd love to hear from you. And also, it's time for our shout-outs for those watching live stream on social media, such as Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Good to see you. Lots of familiar names. Yes, the emojis are flying on YouTube. Great to see that. Well, hey, welcome back, folks. And also welcome back for those listening on radio. It's great to be with you. By the way, I should mention, I usually do, but it's important that visit the virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. I love online resources. Because, you know, every one of us has chores that you have to do. You have to take out the garbage. You have to wash the dishes. And it's really great when you could do these things while listening to a podcast that will inform and entertain. So I'm always listening to podcasts. And if you want to download podcasts for Hands-On Apologetics, go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org website and go to our shows. Scroll down to Hands-On Apologetics and voila. You can access part one of Mathema. You can access the very first show we ever did. You can access other shows with other awesome guests. All right there at your fingertips. Not only Hands On Apologetics, but Jesus 911, Terry Jesse Show, all the awesome shows that Virgin Most Powerful produces. So check it out, folks. And you can download it. You can share it. You can do all sorts of wonderful things with it. And we appreciate that. And by the way, for those watching live stream, you know, we also appreciate, you know, if you could give us a like, you know, subscribe if you can. If you haven't subscribed, you should subscribe. Let people know about us because, you know, part of sharing the faith is that you have to let people know that resources are available and we'd like to be your lifeline if we can. All right. Very good, folks. Let's jump to our Finding the Fallacy segment of today. And the Finding the Fallacy is the tu quoque fallacy, which basically means and you also. And you also fallacy. So what's so fallacious about saying yeah, and you also? Well, it's also appeal to hypocrisy. And the problem with this fallacy is that it tends to discredit the opponent's argument by asserting that the opponent fails to act consistently with its conclusions. So for example, you say that what X is immoral, the person will launch a tu quoque, well, you know, you don't do that, or I know lots of Catholics who don't do that, or I know lots of believers that don't do that, and so on and so forth. So basically what they want to say is, you're preaching one thing, but you're doing another. You're being a hypocrite. And in a way, you know, if I were to categorize it myself, I would say the tu quoque fallacy probably falls more into a non sequitur or red herring because it doesn't necessarily follow. When you give an argument, you're arguing that something is true, okay? Not whether everybody lives up to that truth. That's an entirely different question. And so there's lots of ways you can deal with the tu quoque argument or the yeah and you don't argument, okay? And that is to concede the point. I love this. Trent Horn, when he was on the show, he recommended this, and this is something I've been doing for years. What you do is concede the point even hypothetically. For example, you could say, okay, fine. Let's say I don't live up to the faith. Let's say I'm a horrible sinner. Let's say I am Hitler incarnate. Nevertheless, why is this not wrong? Okay, so you got to refocus, concede the point, say, fine, okay. You know, I concede it. We're terrible sinners or whatever. We don't live up to this truth. Nevertheless, you haven't shown me why it's false. Okay? And once you do that, then, you know, you have to keep refocusing back on the subject. And you'll be A-okay. So that's our Finding the Fallacy for today, the tu quoque fallacy. Now let's go to Meet the Early Church Father. Our Meet the Early Church Father today is Tatian the Syrian. Notice it's not Saint Tatian the Syrian. Boy, try saying that fast. He flourished roughly AD 165. Very little is known about Tatian's life and even less about how he died. He was born in Syria to pagans. He was born in a pagan home. And like Justin Martyr, which we've talked about a few programs ago, St. Justin Martyr, he sought true philosophy and he found it in Christianity, which actually this lines up perfect for our discussion on theistic apologetics today. And his wanderings brought him to Rome, where he became a pupil of Justin Martyr in his school. But whether he was already a Christian before then or not, we really don't know. Tatian was all things an extremist. And here's where it's the fall of Tatian. He returned to the East around the year 172 AD, and he founded his own Gnostic sect of Ancretites, known as the Aquarii. Okay, you don't worry. You don't have to know that. All you have to know is that he kind of went off the deep end. And so they were extremists. They would take things and go to a fanatical extreme. Because, for example, they fanatically rejected any use of wine, so they changed the Eucharist and substituted water for wine in the Eucharist. Others rejected or discouraged second marriages in, you know, within Christianity. But Tatan's sect, actually, his sect rejected even first marriages, which quite possibly was a factor in why this sect disappeared. They just didn't have any offspring. So, you know, he's not a saint. He kind of goes off the deep end after a while. But perhaps he's best remembered for an arrangement of the Harmony of the Gospels. And Harmony of the Gospels basically means, you know, if you read the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and even parts of John, you'll find out that there's some overlap of the historical narrative. Well, Harmony just attempts to put that all into a single historical narrative. And he made one of these. It's called a Detesteron. And until the 5th century, it was the official form in which the Gospels were used in the liturgy in the Syrian church. And in fact, it seems that this Detesteron actually had quite a bit of influence on other Gospels, you know, textual traditions, if you will. We're not really sure what language the original Detesteron was written in. It might have been Greek or Syriac. We still don't know. And only fragments of this work has survived in either of those languages. But we nevertheless can it can be reconstructed. And there are extant reconstructions of it in Latin, Arabic, and also Middle Low Franconian. Okay, very interesting. Anyway, that is our early church father for today, which is Tatian the Syrian. And coming up on the other side of the break, Mathema visits the dojo. We're going to be talking about answering common atheistic objections. So stay tuned, everybody. More to come.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. Well, when we're surfing on the web, watching YouTube, hitting our social media, sometimes we're bombarded with objections by people that don't believe in the existence of God. You know, objections like, is it true that there's no evidence for the existence of God, or who made God, or some other thing? Well, our guest today is what I believe is a person who has done an outstanding job in the area of social media, considering and responding to atheist claims that God doesn't exist. And the name is Mathema. It could be Mathoma or Mathema. I prefer Mathema, personally. He has a wonderful YouTube channel. Please check it out and subscribe, folks, because there's lots of great information. And we're going to continue our discussion about answering common atheistic objections. And by the way, the first one, part one, is March 21st broadcast. So, Mathema, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I hope you'll forgive me if I'm putting the accent on the wrong part of the word.
Oh, that's fine. Like I said last time, it's a made-up name, so either stress is fine with me.
Okay, I prefer that way because, like I said, it sounds more like a Godzilla, a person in Godzilla. You know, Mathema versus error. I love it. Well, hey, we went through several objections last time you were on the program. And, you know, we can maybe just remind the folks about those and maybe just give a really small thumbnail sketch of how one could answer it. For example, many times atheists claim that there's absolutely no evidence for the existence of God. What's a good short retort to that?
Well, like I was saying last time, one ought to be suspicious of whenever someone says there's absolutely no evidence for such and such. There's absolutely no evidence for X. And that usually what it means is that the sort of evidence that they're looking for, the evidentiary standard has to be put into question. And we have to first ask what they mean by evidence, first of all. And like I was saying before, that it's a bit hyperbolic to claim, first of all, that there's absolutely no evidence for such and such. For even if that X statement, there's absolutely no evidence for such and such, even if that's true. But even if that were false, there's still some, at least minimal evidence for at least false statements. Like I was saying last time,
right.
No one believes that the Earth is flat here, but there's at least minimal evidence for it. You could just look out the window and take a look. So you have to be a little suspicious when you claim there's absolutely no evidence for X. And what one ought to do is ask the objector what they mean by evidence.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, there's evidence, but, you know, perhaps we're not looking at the evidence correctly. Maybe we're not drawing the proper conclusions, but nevertheless, there is evidence. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a claim.
Right, and like we were saying last time, perhaps the objector by evidence means something like there is no empirically verifiable experience that I can point to for the existence of God. But that in itself, we have to go over what exactly we mean by God. Because by God, we don't mean some sort of corporeal reality that you can just see like the color of it or such and such, some sort of physical reality. By God, we mean the most metaphysically primal reality, the most fundamental reality, and the subsistent act of existence itself. Now, that is not, strictly speaking, empirically verifiable. That's something we know through, say, philosophical argumentation and the work of the intellect, properly speaking.
Okay, very good. Yeah, and that kind of answers another objection that we treated last time, namely, who made God? And that I could just go one further and say I reject all gods, small g and big g. Because if you're talking about the most fundamental, most basic, most foundational thing or existing thing, then, you know, who made the most fundamental foundational thing doesn't make sense.
Right. The question doesn't even make any sense. Basically, what you'd be asking is what's more fundamental than that which is most fundamental?
Right.
Or
what's
before the first in the order of reality, you know?
Very good. Well, hey, let's move into some new territory then. I think you'll have to give us a little bit of background to this one, but I've heard this as well. Many times atheists would say, well, what if the universe just always existed? What's the nature of this claim? What are they trying to get at?
Well, there are, you're probably aware of this, and your audience is probably aware of this too. There are many philosophical arguments for the existence of God, and there's one in particular that I think is more familiar to someone who's making this objection, which would be the Kalam cosmological argument,
okay,
which seeks to prove through philosophical argumentation that the universe had a beginning and its existence, that it's finite in duration, as opposed to being, you know, infinitely old. And the Kalam argument runs like this. The first stage is whatever begins to exist has a cause of its existence. And stage two is to show that the universe actually began to exist. And so the conclusion is the universe has a cause of its existence. And then there are further arguments that you would show to say that that cause is what we call God. But that is but one argument for the existence of God. It's not, strictly speaking, the mainstream, at least to my knowledge, in the Catholic philosophical tradition. So the atheist is under the impression that in order to deflate all arguments for the existence of God, one just has to say, well, what if the universe is eternally old? What if it just never began to exist? But the problem with this is that it ignores every other argument that is proposed by, say, like St. Augustine, in which this objection simply is irrelevant, because these arguments are not based on the premise or the assumption that the universe began to exist. It could go one way or the other in terms of the truth, and it would not matter for the argument, because those arguments are concerned with the here and now. They're not concerned with some event that happened in the distant past. So this, in terms of the main arguments for the existence of God, this objection is, strictly speaking, irrelevant, because it doesn't appear in one of the premises of the argument.
Okay, so it's only aimed at the Kalam argument, which the second premise is that the universe had a beginning. But that's a problem for the Kalam argument. It doesn't apply to all the other classical proofs for God. Is that correct?
Right. If you take an example, for instance, the first way, St. Thomas' first way, the argument of motion, the argument of change. Major has a version of this in his five proofs called the Aristotelian proof. That argument does not argue from the finitude of the universe, that it had a beginning in time. So it's not required as an assumption for the argument. And since it's not required as an assumption of the argument, bringing up that objection is simply irrelevant.
Yeah.
So
in fact, didn't
you can imagine?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you could, just for the sake of argument, you could say, okay, let's pretend that's right. I mean, of course, as Catholics, you don't believe it's right, but just for the sake of argument, let's pretend that that's right. It would still have nothing to do with argumentation used for St. Thomas' first way. You got to rely upon a subordinate series of movers or actualizers in the here and now. And that's what requires an analysis, not some event that happened in the distant past.
Yeah, very good. Very good. In fact, didn't St. Thomas believe that it's philosophically, you could have an eternal universe and still, you know, the proofs for the existence of God would still work?
Yep. Well, the main arguments that he gives don't rely upon that premise, like I was saying, that the universe began to exist. Of course, St. Thomas is a Catholic, and of course he believes that that's true,
right,
because it's part of the Catholic faith. It's part of divine revelation. But if you check out his essay called De Eternitate Mundi, which is on the eternity of the world, he goes through a slightly different question. He's not so much asking whether the universe began to exist. Of course, he already believes that because it's an article of the Catholic faith. But he's asking a slightly different question, which is, can we prove through a philosophical argumentation that the universe began to exist, that the universe is finite in its age? And that's really the question he's after. And if you go through the analysis, what he's also asking, that is it within the scope of divine omnipotence to have something be created, to both, one, be created, and to be infinite in its age, be infinitely old? And so that's really that's the question he's trying to answer, which is a distinct question from, as a matter of fact, is the universe finite in its age? Did it come into existence at some point in the past? And so St. Thomas, he comes out saying that we cannot prove through a philosophical argumentation that the universe began to exist. Although, as I said, of course, he believes this because it's part of the Catholic faith. But there's some controversy on what position one ought to take on that second question, whether we can prove through a philosophical argument that the universe began to exist. Famously, St. Bonaventure takes the opposite position. He thinks that we can prove through a philosophical argumentation that you cannot traverse an infinite series of events, and therefore the universe had to come into existence at some point in the past, and we can prove it through philosophical argumentation. So that's more of the question that St. Thomas is interested in that paper.
Yeah. Now, who today proposes the Kalam argument or Kalam-like arguments? Is there any people that would know from through social media, for example?
I think the thinker that people most often associate with the Kalam nowadays is William Lane Craig.
Right.
You often see him in debates on YouTube. I think he had a debate with Christopher Hitchens, who's one of the new atheists. But I think Craig is one of the big defenders of the Kalam cosmological argument nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so I'm just curious, I know it's off topic, but what's your personal thoughts on it? Do you think the Kalam argument holds water or not?
Well, of course, I think both premises are true.
Yes.
Although I tend to come out on the side of St. Thomas in that second premise, that the universe began to exist or that the universe is finite in duration, I do think that as a matter of philosophical argumentation, I don't think philosophy or natural reason on its own can prove that. But of course, we accept it as a truth of the Catholic faith.
Right.
But I must admit, I'm a little bit agnostic on the position because I do want to check out like St. Bonaventure's argument too. I've only really skimmed through that one, but it's an interesting question, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and in fact, I for me personally, I think it's dangerous because it gives the impression that the second premise can be known through science, and science is always provisional. It's always changing. It's always refining its conclusions. So, right now, the second premise may seem to be confirmed by science, but who knows? Maybe someday down the road, it might change.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because the strength of the conclusion in an argument depends upon the strength of the premises, the assumptions in the argument. And so if the assumptions are what probable, if they don't reach the level of certainty that, the argument for change has, then the conclusion has this a little bit weaker. So that's why I actually prefer some of the arguments from St. Thomas over the Kalam.
Very good. We're talking with Mathema about answering common objections. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. There's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Mathema about answering common objections, atheistic objections to the existence of God. And Mathema, you know, before we jump into the stone paradox, I just wanted to ask you a kind of personal question. On your website, by the way, all the stuff you have on classical theology is great. Classical apologetics, but there's an awful lot of very high level mathematics. And, you know, can you tell me what your connection is with this? Is this something professional or is it a hobby or, you know, how did you come interested in mathematics?
I studied quite a bit of mathematics in college. In college, I studied physiology and biology, but I've always had an interest in the other sciences as well, physics, chemistry. And naturally, when you get into physics, you have to get into mathematics as well. Right. And there are certain areas of mathematics that I really enjoyed studying, particularly algebra and vector calculus. So that's more of a hobby.
Okay, yeah. Because you put a lot of work into it. It's very interesting. And so, you know, for the listeners, if you want a website, you know, to explore some of these areas, definitely check out Mathema's YouTube channel. I highly recommend it. And of course, I highly recommend the his work with classical theistic apologetics. So while we move to our next objection, and essentially this is known as the stone paradox. Could you explain that a little bit to us?
Yeah, the stone paradox usually gets framed as a question directed against God's omnipotence. So the atheist will often ask something like, well, if God exists, then he's omnipotent. And if he's omnipotent, then can he create a stone such that even he can't lift it, that's so heavy that even he can't lift it? And so the logic of this question would be, well, if he can create a stone that's so heavy that he can't lift, then, well, he can't lift it. If he can't create the stone, then this seems to be something he can't do, and therefore a seeming threat to God's omnipotence. So either horn of the question's answer would seem to be a problem, at least seemingly for God's omnipotence.
Yeah, I had an intro to a philosophy professor at a secular college that, you know, he threw that out with his little smug smile, like, you know, take that, students. You know, can God create a stone so large that he can't lift it? Well, you know, no matter how you answer that, you know, it ends up that God is not all-powerful because either he can't create it or he can't lift it. So how do we get out of that paradox?
Well, we have to examine the features of this supposed stone because it does not suffice to just throw some words together into a sentence and have it have any sort of relevance to reality. So the stone has a feature that it's so heavy that who is omnipotent cannot even lift it. But a stone that's so heavy that an omnipotent being can't lift it is straightforwardly a logical contradiction. Right. It's if you have an omnipotent being, then all things are accessible to it in terms of its power. And something that a stone that has this feature that's so heavy that an omnipotent being can't lift it is straightforwardly a logical contradiction. And because it is a logical contradiction, it's non-being, essentially. It has no chance of even existing in reality. And this question is no more intelligible than asking, can God make a four-sided triangle? And the four-sided triangle, of course, is just a logical contradiction. It doesn't even rise to the level of possibility. It's just a straight-up contradiction, and therefore is simply nothing. It's non-being.
Yeah, it's gibberish. Yeah, it's just a bunch of words put together that doesn't describe anything. Yeah, very good. You know, one way I went about it, which I think is what you say is that, you know, if you define terms as, you know, if God creates us, if the infinite God, which means no limits, creates a stone with no, well, how does it work? Creates something that has no limits. It have to have even greater than no limits for an infinite God not to. Yeah, you're right. I mean, no matter how you cut it, it's it just doesn't make sense because, well, for one thing, the stone would be created. God is uncreated. I don't know. It's somewhere down there. You strip it away, and you come up with a that it's impossible for that to happen. You know, like you said, it's a verbal solid. It's there's no coherence to it.
Yeah, the very stone in question, like I was saying, it doesn't even rise to the level of possibility. Like you can imagine all sorts of possible things that don't happen to exist, like phoenixes or dragons, for instance. Like there's no contradiction in like the thought or the essence of like a dragon or a phoenix. So those things are possible, even though they're not actual. At least as far as I know, they're not actual. But right. Those are at least at the level of possibility, things that could be actualized. But the problem with things like stones that are so heavy that even an omnipotent being could not lift, these are straightforward logical contradictions. And as such, they could not even possibly exist. So they don't even rise to that level of possibility in terms of existence. I mean, like I was saying, this is no more sensible than asking, can God create a four-sided triangle, which doesn't even rise to the level of possibility either.
Right. Yeah, very good. How about this? Well, the universe could be self-sustaining, so there really is no need for God. How would you answer that?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of the classical arguments for the existence of God, they have a couple of different stages. First, we aim to demonstrate the existence of necessary being, or that which just has its existence a se, or totally in itself and not by way of another. But this objection seems to concede to me, or to the theist, that there is such a thing already. There is such a necessary being already. But the atheist just identifies it with the universe itself. And so really he's a pantheist at this point. So that's actually the first stage of the argument that he's seemingly conceded to me. But then what we have to do is, in the second stage of these arguments, we have to kind of go through what it means to be necessary being, to have your being a se, or totally in yourself. And that requires being uncaused in all senses of the term. Uncaused means no composition of parts, because composition of parts requires a concurrent composing cause, which gets us to the conclusion that this necessary being must be absolutely simple, has to be devoid of parts. Another implication of being totally uncaused means it has to be totally without change. It can't have any sort of potentialities that are latent within it, just awaiting actualization, which gets us to the conclusion that this necessary being has to be immutable. And those two, the immutability of necessary being and the simplicity of necessary being, are two attributes that you can see immediately that just cannot be identified with the universe as a whole. And so the universe cannot be this sort of self-sustained necessary being.
Right. Yeah. So if something is composed of parts, then it can't be the most fundamental, the most basic, most foundational thing, because there has to be something keeping the parts together as they are. Right. So it kind of points to an even deeper, more fundamental cause.
Right. Any sort of reality that's made of parts, or that changes, or that could possibly not exist, these are all marks of contingency, as opposed to necessary being. And as such, they cry out for a more fundamental cause. And the universe is no different, really. It's composed of parts. It changes. It could possibly not be. And therefore, it cries out for a more fundamental cause that's not itself the universe. And so the universe, just based on its features, which we see just through our sense experience, it cannot be this sort of self-sustained being that the pantheist now wants to say is true. So we have to dig a little bit deeper into reality for the cause which transcends the universe.
Yeah, this seems to be echoing kind of the universe always existed argument in a way. the only difference is it says that the universe is self-sustaining. But if that's true, then it's always existed. But like you pointed out earlier, you know, even if the universe existed, it still doesn't get you down to that most fundamental level of where God is, so to speak.
Right. And then another thing about the relation between the eternity of the world and, I guess, God's operation, you could say, is that the Quran touches on one feature of God's operation, which is his creation of the universe, beginning at some point in the past. But this is certainly extremely important thing that God does. But what God also does here and now is preserve everything in being.
Yes.
Not just, start the first domino and just let the thing go, let the universe go on its own. But insofar as anything exists at all, you and I exist, for example, anything that's contingent, it's being, it has to be preserved in being by God. So some of the other arguments, like, say, from St. Thomas Aquinas, they get at this feature of God's actuality, his operation.
Yeah, so he's every instant holding us in existence, as opposed to the deist God who just kind of winds up the universe and lets it go.
Right, which when you sort of spell out the metaphysics throughout the classical tradition, you see that even that picture, the deistic picture, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah,
you do require something to hold everything that's contingent in being. Without pure actuality, nothing else like you and I, that's a composite of potentiality and actuality, could even exist for a moment.
Right. Yeah. Very good. That's funny how, our imaginations keep trying to make God into this deist God or a pantheistic God. You know, either everything is God or God just kind of winds everything up and lets it go. It's unusual that, our imaginations want to go to those two extremes. It's hard to wrap your mind around the God who sustains all things every instant.
Yeah, that's true. And one thing that a lot of newer writers in Catholic philosophy and theology, they often point out is that you have to be on guard when you do philosophy for precisely that error, and that you rely too much on your imagination as opposed to using your intellect, properly speaking. Because the best your imagination can do is draw particular images, just particular things. But what your intellect can do is reason through arguments, through universals, through things that are the most abstract and general features of reality, whereas the imagination is kind of stuck at these particulars. So when we're doing philosophy, you have to use your intellect.
Yeah, very good. Excellent. We're talking with Mathema about answering common atheistic objections. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. you can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics. We are talking with Mathema, who is a YouTuber, has a very popular channel that focuses not only on advanced math, but also on the classical theistic arguments for the existence of God and other issues as well. And we're going through a pecking list of some of the most common atheistic objections. And now I think you'll agree with me, Mathema, that this next one is, it's all over the place, not just on social media, but this idea that science has proved that God does not exist.
Yeah, this seems to be, I suppose, a driving theme of the new atheist literature that came out, maybe starting 2005 or so, that somehow there was some sort of result in the sciences, say physics or chemistry or biology, which by itself proved that God does not exist. And therefore, atheism wasn't just a sort of philosophical position, but it was the scientifically respectable position because there was something in the sciences that just implied atheism. But yeah, there are many dimensions of this question we should probably go into. But the first thing to point out is that if you look at the major theories in the sciences, like if you take physics, for instance, if you turn to, say, quantum mechanics or general relativity or any of the other field theories, in not one of these portions of physics do we even have the question of God being addressed at all. I mean, these theories simply aren't about God at all. So one has to wonder what part of science these guys are pointing to that supposedly makes atheism not just a philosophical position, but somehow scientifically respectable.
Yeah, right. There's no God there is no God experiment where you have a control group and, be able to work out whether, if the test comes through positive or we can, the equation comes out to a certain value, then we know God doesn't exist. There's just nothing out there like that.
Right. To put it another way, God simply isn't a part of the subject matter of physics, of chemistry, of biology, of economics or sociology or whatever science you want to point to. God simply isn't in the subject matter of these sciences. You're not looking in the right place to answer this question, to put it yet another way. Where you have to look to answer this question is metaphysics.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't be looking to physics or chemistry to solve this question. The question of whether God exists is not a question that empirical sciences can answer because they don't, simply because they don't study it. That's just not what they're interested in. So they don't settle the question one way or the other. It's metaphysics and philosophy that we have to turn to answer this question.
Right. There's inherent limits to scientific investigation. For example, they can only investigate things that are quantifiable, right?
Right. And this is something that we don't say of God. God isn't like a physical reality that you identify, right here, or some sort of material reality, or some sort of reality that exists in one place and for a certain duration. But like we've been driving at, God is pure actuality. He's a necessary being, the substance and act of existence itself. And these aren't things that you just locate somewhere in the visible world. It's not some sort of physical reality you just identify, like you or me, for example. You just identify them right here and right now. So like I was saying, God just isn't in the subject matter of these sciences. We have to turn to metaphysics to answer this question.
Right. You know, I think what lurks behind this objection is that misunderstanding that we talked about in part one of God being like a small g God, a feature within the universe, that like a Mr. God who's, you know, the strongest in the universe, the most intelligent in the universe, you know, the fullest, the best behaved thing in the universe. And therefore, you know, that would kind of fall within the providence or province of scientific investigation, since it's part of the universe, right? But we're talking about a totally different category of being.
Right. We're talking about pure actuality here. We're not talking about some sort of exalted reality by degrees from us. We're talking about the transcendent God. We're not talking about some sort of uncanny reality that exists within the physical universe. David Bentley Hart came up with that expression, Mr. God, because it does show how the new atheists, they limit what we're talking about when we say God. I mean, if that's what we're talking about when we say God, that's some sort of exalted physical reality that's within the universe, then I suppose this would be amenable to scientific investigation, and people like Richard Dawkins would have a point when they say that the God hypothesis should be subject to test just like any other hypothesis. But unfortunately, that's not what we mean in the first place, so it's just irrelevant.
Yeah, in fact, I remember seeing an atheistic video where the person said, well, how do you know that you haven't gone to all the different universes and all the distant realities and haven't found a being that's even greater than what you call God? And I thought, boy, that just completely misses the whole point. Because if you found something like that, you know it's not God, because we're talking like pure act, like you said, pure subsistent act. We're not talking about a thing in the universe. We're talking about the thing that upholds the universe.
Right. We're looking for the ultimate cause. We're looking for the first cause. We're not looking for yet another physical reality that we could identify and theorize about. Like God isn't like an electron, like some sort of a localized reality that we build theories off of.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. In fact, you know, it's also, I think this also assumes that science is the most fundamental way in which we can know truth, in a sense that that's even science can tell us things about metaphysics and, you know, other questions like that. Do you agree?
Right. That's another dimension to this question as well, is that the person asking it usually is assuming some sort of scientism, mm-hmm. which is the view that only what the empirical sciences reveal to us should be considered knowledge, that the only means of knowledge available to us would be the empirical sciences, for example, physics, chemistry, biology, for instance. And therefore, anything other than that, any other discipline such as philosophy or metaphysics or theology, these are to be excluded because they are not themselves empirical sciences. So that position would be scientism. But the problem with scientism is that it's transparently self-refuting. Mm-hmm. It's a metaphysical position of itself, which tries to undermine all other metaphysical positions. The thesis of scientism itself is not a result of the empirical sciences. Like, the empirical sciences do not tell us that all knowledge is to be limited within physics, for instance. That's not something that comes out of the empirical sciences.
Right.
To put another way, the thesis of scientism cannot be scientifically verified. It cannot be itself known through scientific means, and therefore it is self-refuting. And if the person who espouses scientism claims to know this, he knows this through a means which is supra-scientific or above the scientific, and therefore he refutes his own position because he just told us that we are only to limit ourselves with the empirical sciences. So
yes.
To put it yet another way, he's trying to deny metaphysics, which seeks to sort of survey being, to survey reality. But when the propounder of scientism, he has to get himself to this position to where he can survey reality just to espouse his scientific position himself, which is it's the sort of position that he's identifying that's possible. So it's a metaphysical system that tries to reject all metaphysics, which is just contradictory and self-refuting.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, you know, we have two more objections. Maybe we could go through them fairly quickly. One would not necessarily be a direct argument against God's existence, but, you know, someone could have a random gripe about some aspect of Catholic moral theology, you know, that they disagree with ethics, therefore your God doesn't exist.
Yeah, see, that's, I suppose, more of a rhetorical objection. So, I mean, you and I both know there are certain issues within the secular world that are extremely controversial, for example, sexual ethics. And so the objector wants to say something like, oh, well, if your arguments are right, then, I'm going to have to conduct my life in a way that's totally different than the way I'm conducting myself now. So that's a reason to reject your philosophical arguments. But the problem is that the objector has to actually address the arguments. He can't just say parenthetically that there's a certain ethical teaching of the church, for instance, that he disagrees with. He has to actually address the metaphysics of the argument.
Yes. Yeah, in other words, he's kind of just misdirecting to some other issue and not really dealing with the arguments itself.
Right.
Yeah, and I think you could probably say the same thing. I love how you put it's insert random historical grievance against the church, like Galileo or Inquisition. That's also kind of a red herring, too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would give more or less the same reply to that. Even though I think with a lot of the historical stuff, those objections or quote unquote objections are just diffused by studying history in a little bit more detail.
Yeah.
Like there are aspects of the Galileo affair and of the Inquisition that many people just aren't aware of.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Usually what's like presented in like public schools, for instance, is simply mythology.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think a clear understanding of history would diffuse about 90% of these objections, especially with Galileo and the Inquisition.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you take the worst take on Galileo and the Inquisition and any other grievance, it still doesn't follow that there's no first cause and, you know, a subsistent being. It just doesn't follow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to, clamp down on these objections is that you have to ask them, which premise of the argument do you disagree with? Because these arguments have a number of different premises. For example, change is real. Whatever goes from potentiality to actuality requires an actualizer. There cannot be an infinite series of subordinated actualizers. So you have to ask them which premise, which stage in that argument do they disagree with? I mean, what they can't do is just go on these little filibusters about some sort of historical grievance they have against the church. They have to actually address the metaphysics of the argument. Of the argument itself, and if they don't, then they're not actually addressing the argument. They're just trying to fluster you.
That's right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on Hands on Apologetics.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, thank you. And that is Mathema, ladies and gentlemen. Check them out on YouTube. Lots of great material on theistic apologetics, also mathematics. Coming up after our show is the dynamic duo of Talk Radio, Catholic Talk. It's Terry and Jesse's show. And tomorrow, Paul Thomas comes into the dojo to talk about overcoming fear of going to confession. So, a very timely subject. Also, today we have the debut of a new show, Church for the Masses, by Dr. Barbara Nicolosi. So, check that out at noon Pacific time. First, Talk Radio. It's time for me to turn off the lights here in the dojo. I hope everybody has a great day. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold,
for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.